Okay, servus everybody. Today I will talk to you about I believe it when I see it, teaching computer vision with visual programming. But first of all, I want to introduce myself. Hello everybody, I'm Giulio, and I actually come from Northern Italy, but I have recently moved here in Austria, in the beautiful city of Graz. And what do I do in my life? So, I'm a software engineer, and I build things for the web. I'm a front-end developer, and I build interfaces that allow people to perform their work better, and I also build the tools. And my professional career brought me working for a company called Flux that is building a tool for creating circuit boards on the web. But the reason why I arrived there, it's because of a lot of things that I built. And today I wanted to talk to you about one in particular. And it all started when I was studying at my university. I studied computer science in the Ca' Foscari University of Venice. And there I was a bit known as the web and front-end guy. And for this reason, one day one professor reached out to me and asked me to collaborate because they wanted to build a software, a tool, to allow the high school students to come to the university in some days and do some experiments with computer science, with computer vision in particular, and learn how programming works. And the thing that we wanted to show to the students and make them try was a concept called the AF transform in computer vision. That is a very interesting algorithm that is used to detect lines in images. Imagine that you have a line defined by the set of points in a XY space. You can see that for each point, that point corresponds to an infinite amount of lines with a certain parameter of slope and distance from center. But instead, if you have more of those points, all those distances from center and angles will have a maximum in one point that will be the parameter of the line that we're looking for. You see that it's already a bit of a complicated concept, even though it's used quite simple math. But to understand it, you have to see it visually. Because it all starts with the recognition of an image from your webcam, of a sort of joystick made of plastic with a pink strip that is easily recognizable by an algorithm. The second step is using that pink strip, using some sort of chroma key algorithm, to determine the pixels that are part of the pink strip and the pixels that are not. Why are we doing this? Because we want to detect what's the angle of the joystick. And then we can isolate those pixels to see what is part of the line or not. And we can then transform all the pixels of this strip into what is called the half space. It's a bit technical and it's not the focus of the presentation, but what we end up with is two parameters that are the angle with which I rotated the joystick and the distance from the center. What do we want to do with those two numbers? We want the users to play a little game, so that they can use the joystick in front of the webcam, like winging it through the air, and play a game with this joystick, which angle is recognized through computer vision. And but here there is a problem. You see that it's a lot of steps to perform this algorithm. First, detect the pixels, then detect the chroma key, the angle, the half space, and so on. And doing it all through code, it's not that simple. And years ago, I have seen this video called The Biggest Myth in Education about Veritasium, a very famous YouTuber, that talked about the kind of learning that people have. Why did they do this? Because I saw that all this algorithm was a bit too complicated for being explained in 3 hours. So I tried to make it easier to understand. So this video say that people have different kind of learning styles that can be auditory learning, if you are hearing somebody teaching you something. Visual learner, if you are somebody that prefers visual metaphors and illustrations. Reading writing learner, people that understand better by reading explanation on a book. And kinesthetic learners, people that learn better by doing. But the entire point of the video was that at the end, a very nice study showed how actually this doesn't really matter, because it's not a matter of some kind of learning style that you prefer, but actually the moment that you use all your senses, all the auditory, visual, reading, writing, and kinesthetic to learn something better, you will remember that thing better. If you remember back in high school, you will surely remember doing chemistry and physics laboratory experiences, such as understanding how the double slit experiment works, burning materials and such. And learning things on the book, and then hearing about it, and then seeing with your eyes and doing those things, at the end, it's a way with which you remember the thing that you learn about better. And we tried to use this same approach, because understanding and remembering works better when we are using all our senses. And we try to use this principle. But if we look to programming, if you want to do computer vision stuff, it's not very simple, because there is a lot of code that is everything but visual. And we didn't want the user to go through this, especially when you want to see the output, you have to use libraries that are quite complicated, and you must see numbers for outputs. And this is not very good for something that has vision in the name. You want your algorithm to have some kind of visual representation if you want the users to understand what is going on. And regarding this, there is a beautiful article wrote by a guy called Brett Victor, that was a designer by Apple, that worked for Apple, that described how we can make programming something that is more understandable and learnable. And he was talking about this concept of showing the state. If you have an algorithm that does stuff and has variables, if you show the values of the variables and what they are doing, the user will understand way better what is going on if you show visually the state of the application, or at least showing the numbers of what's going on in real time. And also, I try to look into different examples of visual programming. One of those is Scratch, that is a visual programming tool developed by MIT, in which you have to you have several procedural blocks that you can drag and drop with your mouse, and you don't have to worry about syntax and stuff. And then I looked into other examples, like SynthEdit, that is a visual programming tool for building synthesizers, software synthesizers, and sound effects. And it's very cool, because every block represents some kind of signal processing unit, and you can have literally the audio output that connect from one block to each other. So you can understand, like, if you are physically connecting cables between your equipment. And if we want to move into the more visual world, we also have Blender, that is a 3D rendering tool, a 3D rendering and modeling tool, that for defining materials has this concept of blocks. For example, I can have a texture that goes into a warp effect, into a normal map effect, and so on. And I can program what I want to happen, seeing in each block what is the input and the output visually. And this is way more powerful than using, for example, a Python API if we want to learn and understand in real time what's happening. So I ask myself, as I showed you before, we have this algorithm with very well-defined steps and blocks. And how do we build an user interface for the students to program this algorithm? It all starts with some kind of palette of blocks that is like a sidebar with all the blocks, all the operations that are available, so that you can quickly see, this is the thing that I'm able to do. And you don't have to dive through API documentation for it. And you can grab and drag and drop those blocks and combine them by drawing lines, so that the input of one goes into the output of one goes into the input of another. And you can also create complex structures with a lot of different blocks. But not only, you can have numbers or images and see them in real time on the blocks. In this way, in real time, you can see that there is a chroma key block that takes into input a normal image and outputs a mask. And this is very powerful because you can see what the algorithm is doing without having to use debuggers or things like that. And also for interactivity, we use the webcam as a video input, and we have the possibility to have inputs with sliders and so on. So you can move the slider and see that the application reacts automatically. And how do we build this? We want the blocks to be some kind of programmable. So we want the students to be able to program the function for these blocks. And to do so, we take the editor of Visual Studio Code and we put it in the browser with this extension that is called Monaco Editor, so that the users are able to write JavaScript code directly into the browser and have a modern editor that allows them to use auto formatting and code completion, IntelliSense, and so on. And we have also other technologies at our disposal, such as Babel, Prettier, and TypeScript, that run directly into the browser, so that they don't have to write and type the code, but they can directly write code that is safe, and it's a way better user experience than writing something that may fail completely. And also, we can use Babel to prevent some stuff from happening. For example, if we know that some student may write an infinite loop, we can instrument the code in a way that if it detects an infinite loop, it automatically bails out so that the user is also protected from doing bad stuff. So now I will like to give you a quick demo of the application. And if you want, you can also try it right now on this link. And let's load it right here. The application runs on the browser, and it's built with React. And we have our block editor, our palette, our code editor, and the visualization of what is happening right now. You can grab a camera input block, and to perform our chroma key, we grab our RGB to YUV that converts the color into different color space. We can take, for example, the output frame from here and connect it here. So clicking here, we can see the different color space and how it works. So what we are using as a joystick is questions later? Do you have questions? Yes, it's this one. cvedu.vercel.app. And what we will use as joystick is this as a slider, because I don't have anything else. And so what we're doing now is taking this chroma key block and give it as an input, our frame. And clicking on it, you're able to see the code for it, and we can write some code. So what we want to do is select all the pixels that are within a certain radius. So we extract our YUV that are saved into your YUV frame.data.e. And we can use all the Visual Studio Code features, like the code completion and also the multiple cursors. And in this way, we can perform our chroma key algorithm. Let's do it. So let's calculate our distance from u, that is our u minus our point. Let's do the same for v. We can also use multiple cursors because it's actually Visual Studio Code. Now let's calculate our distance, that is with the Pythagoras theorem. It's our distance in u squared plus our distance in v squared. And now we say that we write on our mask that if the distance is less or equal than the radius, we write a positive pixel, so 255, otherwise zero. We can press play, and if we add our controls here for the radius and the color input, if everything goes to plan because there is the demo effect, okay, we can try to find the color for this highlighter. So, since we can do this in real time, we should be able to okay. You see that I can select the color that I want to extract, and the moment that I click on that, I can adjust the radius, so how many colors will be matched, and also the colors that we want to extract. So it's this one, perfect. And now we see that if we rotate this highlighter, it only detects the highlighter so that we can quickly remove it from the background. Can also turn a bit down, perfect. We can also do other things such as composite images, and we can send our highlighter into vacation. If we have our frame input and we add another image here, let's get the solution for this one. Okay, we can send our highlighter into vacation. But the real interesting thing that we want to do now is detecting the line, as we said before, with the half transform. So let's get this half module that takes as an input our mask with the pixel, so the pixels of this highlighter, and our YUV frame, because it will weight them with how contrasting is this highlighter. We can here write our algorithm, but since we don't have much time for it, we will click on solution. If it works. Pardon me. It always works in production. Oh. Okay. So here we can finally see our accumulator. What does this mean? It means that in the y direction, we have the distance from the center. And in the x direction, instead, we have the angle of the line. It means that for each pixels, it tries to say, okay, this may be part of a line or not. And once we have this representation, we can find what is the maximum pixel here and determine what is the actual direction of the line of this highlighter. And if we take another block here, that is the draw line that is useful for debugging, we can, first we have to get the maximum accumulator, Okay, and we can see already that solution. It's able down here to say what is the angle that we rotated the eye ladder with, and if we get the angle here and the frame, we're able to see also visually what is the direction of this eye ladder, and we built this algorithm by seeing what the steps are and being able to see all the way what is the output of each block. So we know that this converts the color, this one isolates the pixel of the highlighter, this one tries to reconstruct all the lines that are present, and this one instead gets the maximum probability of the line, calculating the degrees, and this one draws the line instead. And this is pretty much what the experience of the students that tried this is. But we say, well, we could do a bit better because there is not really an incentive in finding what is the line of this highlighter. So what could we do to make this a bit more interesting? And for this reason, we also built a little game that is a block here that we can input the angle found by this half transform here. And once we click on the game, we can draw a little car with our highlighter. And the goal that we have here is to try to avoid the obstacles. And all this is just done winging an highlighter in front of a webcam. And of course, there is no gameplay, but that's what the budget is. And yeah, so summing up, what happened is that this was unfortunately built in the end of 2019, and so it was the worst time possible to invite schools and university, but so I didn't see it in action. In fact, this is a random picture of our computer science laboratory, so pretend that this is actually one of the sessions in which they use it. But they recently used multiple times, and compared to the previous approach that was writing MATLAB code and seeing output every time that you press play on the IDE, apparently from the feedback that I received from the professor, the students had a lot of fun. And actually, I hope that they learned something while using this program. So, summing up, as I said, starting from principles, and the principles that I want to leave you with, if some days you will design something like software like that, is first of all, show the state. Don't hide things under a terminal, under rerunning the application every time. But if you want users to understand what is going on, always show the state of the system, maybe visually, maybe in with audio, maybe with an animation. But this is really important if you want the user to have a spark in their brain and realize the connection between things. Another thing is throw the parts on the floor. It means that if you want users to be proficient with your tool, what you want to have is some kind of way for them to easily discover what the system is capable of. Like when you take Lego and you throw all the parts on the floor, and you can quickly see what you need and grab it from the floor. And the last one is, if you give interactivity in real time, you're giving superpowers to your users so that they can see how the system reacts without having to close the recompile and run thing again. And yeah, my time is over. And thank you for following my presentation. I hope that it wasn't too heavy. And if you have any questions, I'm here.